I've been sent down here to ask about, I guess, some of the ramifications of the trial of the two officers that were on, you know, under federal charges for corruption and what have you. And to ask, what sort of policy changes do you foresee in the near future to try to, I guess, provide oversight or to try to prevent something like that from happening again?
Actually, we started that over a year ago, and the policies are already in place. The first thing we had to do was identify where did stuff slip through the cracks, you know, and the allegations made it pretty clear that we needed work on informant handling. We needed better policies for that. We needed better policies for cash handling, and we needed to have better policies regarding oversight of both of those issues. So, you know, we drafted a policy and on informant handling, which included much more documentation. It included informant review by supervisors. It just basically, you know, we want our supervisors to know what those informants are doing always. We took that over to the DA's office, got their approval, got their blessing on it. Then we took it to our own auditor's office in City Hall and had them review it and that got their blessing from it. We made some minor changes in wording based on both of the those two entities, and then put it out to the officers. The cash handling, it was mainly in, for patrol officers, not that we don't ask SID officers to go follow the same rules, but we make sure there's a captain goes to the site of every major seizure or cash, whether it's a seizure for drugs or just somebody that has the money on them that's getting arrested for something else. Same way, of course, at search warrants and everything else, we're going to have somebody there in the command staff of the captain to watch the counting, make sure it's processed properly, turned in properly. Again, oversight's been a huge issue. Oversight's the thing that's gonna that was not present in some of these cases where we know officers did things they shouldn't have done. We're doing this as much to protect our officers from future allegations, as we are, of course, to make sure they don't do it. You know, this is a real issue now that we want to make sure that nobody can say, oh, this is just like happened during the corruption trial. You know, we heard about all this. We want to protect our officers, and we also want to protect our public and make sure that officers don't have the opportunity to do this.
It brings up an interesting question with Officer Yelp in particular being cleared, basically, of all charges by that jury.
That's correct.
I mean, do police officers have to worry more now than they did before about those kind of allegations being leveled against them? Are we in a different sort of environment with the public now, or is it just this was just a fluke thing that happened? Or?
I think there's going to be residual stuff go on, and our my officers are worried about that. And again, this will help resolve some of that. I hope every officer does take note of the fact, even after all he went through, and it was certainly, I think, a tragic circumstance that he had to go through it. It's still, the fact still remains, he was acquitted. Now, we are going to look at department as a department ourselves at what all the officers who were acquitted, what they did. We're going to go through it with a fine-tooth comb. If we find policy violations or any other kind of violations, we're going to take action on those. You know, we aren't just assuming that everything's okay because, you know, we're going to do administrative investigations as well.
Is there any chance that if those investigations uncover any kind of wrongdoing, that these officers could still face possibly city charges? Or
city charges would be unlikely because they're all misdemeanors. They don't relate to I'll just tell you, in any investigation, administrative investigation, if we uncover criminal behavior, it will be investigated, and it will, if there's anything to it, if there's anything that gives us probable cause, we're going to take it to the district attorney and present it for charges.
Okay, let me step back for a second. You said that, let's say that an officer makes an arrest in a domestic case, and there's quite a bit of cash laying around the house. Is there a particular amount that triggers that mechanism so that a captain has to respond to the scene? And
I think we ended up with a figure of $1,000 or more.
So anything $1,000 or more?
However, in that particular instance, I'll just say, it would be very unusual for us to remove money from a house.
Right. So it's more likely to be
in a motor vehicle, on foot,
or a drug transaction. Perhaps,
Obviously, if it's a drug search warrant, we are going to remove money from a house, very possibly, if we have any indication that it's receipts from drug transactions.
Would you, in a case like that, then proactively just have a captain on the scene when you search the warrant, with the assumption that there probably would be cash or something like that?
Not necessarily. It depends on the warrant. If we know we're going after a major drug dealer and we're having information that they've got money, yeah, we may very well do that. We may have a captain on the scene. But what we would normally do, if an officer comes across that, everything stops when you find the money, and before it's even recovered, a captain's there to observe the recovery, to observe the counting, to observe the turning in, the whole thing.
Now, I know you guys are pinched manpower-wise. I had a real interesting conversation last week. Leland was there with Officer Lungan.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, do these policies stretch even thinner because you're having to provide the oversight and maybe do some things that you weren't doing before?
We have to prioritize things. And right now, enhancing the trust of our citizens is job number one. And it may stretch things a little bit, but I think it's well worthwhile to protect our public and to protect our officers.
Let me follow that up with a question about a potential reorganization. Because I didn't go in there, actually, was not necessarily the topic of conversation, but it came up that your majors and your captain, you're looking at potentially doing a fairly extensive overhaul of the structure, of the organizational structure of the department. Am I off track there? Or?
Let me tell you what we're getting ready to do. We're getting ready to do a zero-based assessment. I think we owe it to the public to show, are we deploying our people efficiently? Are we deploying our people in the way that where the need is the most? And that doesn't mean that when we're done, we don't end up very much exactly like we are. So there's no plan to overhaul anything. We just want to assess it all, see if we're doing the right thing, and see if there needs to be changes. Obviously, when we lose manpower, we have to prioritize. We had to do it with what kind of calls we respond to. I would love to see us tomorrow be able to go back to taking larceny reports and burglary from vehicle reports. But the reality is people can do it online. They can do it through the telephone report office. And if I send people to that, somebody that's got a 911 emergency isn't going to get a police officer as fast. So we've had to prioritize. We're working with the mayor's office now to see about more academies, get more people on. We want to be able to be a full-service police department where we provide every service we can to our community. And it's unfortunate that we have to do this prioritization, but we just have to.
So that brings up two questions. One, is there a timetable in place? And two, what would the mechanism be for that study? Do we hire an outside agency, or is it something that you do internally?
No, we'll do that internally. Historically, when you look at city police departments, outside entities very often come in, and sometimes they will give you ideas for what other departments do. But as often as not, these companies have a template that they want followed, and it doesn't always match up with our needs in the city of Tulsa. So we're going to do it internally. We're going to start in early September. People are accumulating information right now, doing research, and we're going to come back, and as a command staff, we're going to talk about, we've instructed everybody not to be defensive of their ground, pretend like it isn't your ground. Look at this objectively, and we're going to try to come back and determine where our needs are and where maybe we can cut back.
What about public input? I realize that might be kind of a Pandora's box, but
that's going to be part of it, because during this research we're also going to talk about what are we getting from alert neighbors meetings, what are we getting from community, neighborhood associations. What are we getting? What are the public's concerns right now? What are their, you know, it is a Pandora's box because it's very difficult. You know, we just went through the survey that the mayor's office put out, and that addressed a lot of issues that we're going to use also when we're doing this assessment. This is what the public's concerned about. This is what we want. Unfortunately, it's hard to get a referendum vote from the public. You can only get a sampling, and samplings aren't always right. So I don't really trust sampling sometimes. I think we have a pretty good sense of what the public expects of us, and we're getting that from community meetings. We're getting that from alert neighbors meetings. We're getting that from correspondence and emails. We know what the public wants, and we've got to look at some point, too, and say, okay, we've got 500 people that want us to do burglary from vehicle reports. That doesn't mean that I'm going to be able to do that, and at the sacrifice of making emergency calls. You know, I mean, it's just we've got to prioritize.
And if change is, let's say that we start in early September, and by mid next year, we've decided, okay, we need to implement these three major changes. Is that something that you have to go to city government and get approval for, or I guess how much latitude do you have to make those changes internally without having to?
I think we'll have the latitude to make any positive changes that we need to make within the department. Obviously, if you know, I suddenly said I don't want anybody in patrol anymore, I want everybody in detective division, I'm sure the mayor would have some issues with that, as would I. But, you know, no, for the most part, we have the latitude to make those kind of internal changes. And again, you know, I'm going to advise the mayor's office and the council if it's anything significant enough that the public is going, this should be very transparent to the public. The public probably won't even recognize that it happened. I don't anticipate this being major changes. This could be some very minor as to how many people we got working traffic or how many people we have in a given burglary detail. This isn't going to be a sweeping change where we're going to change the basic structure of the police department. You know, we're still going to have our operations bureau and our patrol divisions and our SWAT team, and we're going to have our investigative bureau and detectives, and we're going to have all those things. We're going to have administrative bureau that's going to run our lab and our, you know, it's not going to be anything that sweeping where we're changing the basic infrastructure, but we will look at how we deploy people.
So you don't foresee us opening up any new patrol divisions?
No, I do not.
Okay. I don't want to take up a bunch of time, but this is interesting. I did want to ask you, and this is just completely off the topic. I saw you at the Tower Guy standoff there one afternoon, and I wasn't for sure, but I went, that looks like Chief Jordan.
I was there every day at some point in time.
Every day. So were you just kind of checking up to see, you know, how things were going, or did you take a personal interest in it, or?
This is probably one of the most nerve-wracking times that my SWAT team and my officers, patrol officers, have ever, incidents that my officers had to go through. It was very difficult for them. I think they needed to see their chief there saying, is there anything you need? Is there any resource that I can get you that you need? And some of it was certainly personal interest. This is a tormented young man that I think the whole city was praying would get down safely, and I was one of them. So, yeah, there was a personal interest as well, but it was also to make sure that they had anything they asked for to resolve it.
I have to say, just as a personal observation, because I spent a few days out there, I was struck by how empathetic the police officers on the scene were. You know, you would have thought after 4 or 5 days in that brutal heat and this guy's just ignoring that, they'd have been a little ticked.
Yeah.
And really, I didn't sense that. I didn't get that. And I think that kind of attitude sort of comes from the top down. So I guess that's a prop for you and for your guys that are running your teams out there. Captain Perkins?
Yeah. Well, these are guys, you know, and I've said this before, but SWAT teams are very testosterone-driven organizations. I mean, these are guys that are going to go face armed criminals crashing through a door with submachine guns in their hands. And for them to be able, you know, the negotiators are always, their goal, their task is to talk somebody out, to talk somebody into compliance. Not always so with operators. They go to work when the negotiators aren't successful. And to witness the compassion by my officers out there on the scene, the patrol officers, the SWAT guys, I couldn't be more proud of them. I mean, they genuinely wanted to get this guy down safely. They were genuinely concerned. They're just a very impressive group of men and women.
And it was a win because, you know, he's down.
Yeah, he is down.
When he got hurt, that was amazing. Who actually made the call? Who was it that went, you know what, we need to call, and I forget his name, but the retired officer who was the negotiator?
Well, that's another whole subject that I'm proud to be a cop. It was actually suggested by some of the negotiators because he had been successful in the past. We had tried everything. We'd had African-American negotiators talking to him. We'd had a female talking to him. We'd had everything. We tried all different combinations. And, excuse me. Because of his success in the past, someone suggested Tyrone Lynn. And I think that kind of outside-the-box thinking is just, it's exemplary of our police department that we did that. And it was exemplary of the mayor's, you know, my concern was, how do we indemnify him? He's no longer a city employee. This guy jumps and his family says, hey, it's because of this negotiator or there's some issue. And graciously, the mayor's office immediately came forward and said, we'll take care of him. And he gave us an MOU or basically a statement saying we would take care of him. And that was a big deal. But the biggest deal to me was that, you know, here's someone who's retired. We all kind of have a sigh when we retire. I've done it once. Excuse me. And for him to still have that kind of dedication and that kind of commitment to go and help one of his fellow men and help his police department after he's retired, that's, you know, it never stops. It's part of your psyche, and I think that's neat.
It is. And it was amazing to see him actually be successful finally.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, you know, back on the corruption thing for a second, do you have any other thoughts or, you know, do you have anything else you want to say on that topic? Because I know it's kind of a broad topic.
Well, it's, you know, the police department, it was, everybody was taken aback by the actions of a few. Everybody has experienced questions from their family, from their church, fellow church members, from everybody in the community about it, and it makes everybody feel a little antsy, like, hey, are they looking at me? I've been lucky enough to go to a lot of neighborhood meetings lately and gatherings where I think we still have very much our public support. There's always going to be some naysayers. I've kind of come to the conclusion that the people that like the police in the first place are going to recognize that we're an organization made up of human beings, and we had some folks that messed up. The people that didn't like the police are going to point and say, well, of course that's the way they are. And you have to accept that. You know, you've got to have thick skin to be a cop anyway. You know, we've got to move forward. To the naysayers and to anybody who's concerned about trusting the police department, I just tell them to watch us. Tell me what you think in a year.
And do you have any kind of feeling for how long before it'll be determined if Officer Yelton would be able to rejoin the police department? Have you discussed it with him or his representatives in any way?
Well, that's going to be completely up to our internal affairs unit. And I all I can say is we're going to investigate it thoroughly, and it'll be over when it's over. You got to remember, we've got a lot of material to go through to determine if there was a policy violation of any kind. And that'll take a while. Excuse me. I don't pressure those guys in internal affairs with time limits. I want the most thorough investigation possible for the public and for the officers.
Have they, for any reason, you know, waited to start that investigation until after the court case was settled, or?
We have to.
Oh, okay.
You got to remember, it's because they work for the police department, they have to answer questions if internal affairs calls them in. If they're still under a criminal charge, that would be violating their Fifth Amendment rights. So we can't at all start an administrative investigation until the criminal investigation is over with.
So let me just say that back to you so I understand it. A police officer who comes under investigation by internal affairs must answer all questions.
That's correct.
Because he's an employee, it's not a matter of his civil rights, it's a matter of his...
This is policy violation. This is policy violations we're talking about.
Okay. So while a criminal proceeding is underway against a police officer, IA cannot talk to him because he could potentially violate his civil rights by talking to them.
Exactly.
Until the criminal investigation is
done. We don't want to take that chance.
Okay, cool. Well, that's interesting to know. All right. Well, I think that's enough for one day.